This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Thursday morning after the 10:30 news. And at this time every week, we talk to our guy, Major Garrett, the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News and the author of The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. Major Garrett is with us right now, Amy Marks-Kors and Chris Ranji. How's it going, Major?
Great. Thank you for playing my Led Zeppelin anthem, Ramble On. That is my life motto, Ramble On.
But it's always good information, and there's, I think you're always pretty efficient with your words.
I try. I do my best.
Okay, now the sucking up portion is over.
Yeah.
We got some real tough questions for you, Major Garrett.
A little more brief this week than previous week, you know. But I won't hold that against you.
No, we're bookending it. There's going to be more sucking up later.
I prefer 2.5 to 3 full minutes of sucking up.
Our boss told us to go easy this time. He's like, okay.
The overlords, they're everywhere.
I know, right? You can't run away.
Actually,
from them.
He didn't say that. We're just blaming him.
Okay. Major, let's jump into the big, beautiful bill and some of the tax and spending priorities within it. Where are we with this?
So, look, by any stretch of the imagination, it was a very important victory for House Speaker Mike Johnson and the House Republican leadership to get this budget resolution passed, even though it looked hours before they passed it, by the narrowest of majorities and margins, that it wasn't going to pass. For a moment, they pulled the bill, said, well, we have to come back tomorrow. Everyone reassessed, and they got it through. That's meaningful because it sets this process in motion. I will try not to bore the audience with all the intricacies of the process. Just know this. A budget resolution is like a blueprint for a house. It describes the broad design features of taxing and spending over the next 10 years. The Senate has its own blueprint. They are very different from each other. The Senate has no blueprint for tax cuts. It only has defense, border security, and a couple of other things. The House Republican has lots of spending cuts and taxes. So they have to figure out which of those blueprints they're going to use. And once they've decided on that, the House and the Senate have to vote on that blueprint. Then you start to build the house. You start actually writing the policy, which tax cuts retain from the 2017 Trump tax cuts. Do you add any additional tax cuts to that? No tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security. Some of those things came up in the campaign. All of that yet to be determined. And there's going to be a lively debate about some of the projected reductions in future spending, which is what they are for like things like Medicaid. There's instructions to trim $880 billion over the next 10 years. Republicans would be quick to tell you that's not an actual cut. That's just reducing the amount of growth. It would still grow by 2% a year for all 10 years, each of the 10 years. It just wouldn't grow as fast. Democrats will say, okay, that's technically true, but that still means lots of Americans are going to be left out of coverage that they currently have now. So for them, it's a cut, however you semantically describe it. That's going to be one of the political live wires. And House Republicans and Senate Republicans are going to have to figure out what they're going to do with Medicaid. How deeply are they going to reduce benefits? And how are they going to explain that? Because of all the things that are out there right now, presently, that's going to be the hottest political wire of all.
So what has the discussion behind closed doors been like with that revelation and the fear that for a lot of people that something drastic will happen to Medicare and Medicaid and people will lose coverage?
So Medicare and Medicaid are very popular programs. President Trump was emphatic yesterday at the cabinet meeting. He's not going to touch Medicare or Social Security. He also threw Medicaid in there. What does touching mean? Well, Republicans will say that means not reducing benefits for those who genuinely deserve it. Well, does that mean people who are receiving benefits now, who you suddenly classify as undeserving? Who are the undeserving? Well, Republicans might say the able-bodied poor who are not working. They want work requirements, not only for Medicaid, but for food stamps, what's now called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. All right, what do those work requirements look like? How tough are they? Do they actually create the savings that you imagine that they will? Meaning, is the population of those who, as Speaker Mike Johnson said on TV last night, 29-year-old men just sitting around their basement playing video games, how many people on SNAP or Medicaid actually fall into that category? The analysis suggests not nearly as many as Republicans are talking about. So maybe the savings aren't as big as they imagine. All of that is to be determined. You got to write that into law. You got to put the facts on the pieces of paper, and they have to withstand scrutiny. And trust me, on Medicare and Medicaid, the scrutiny will be intense.
Major, switching over to Ukraine and the conflict there, and we've seen a real shift here from the U.S. government under Donald Trump, where we are seeing animosity towards Zelensky, with Donald Trump calling him a dictator, and an openly solicitous attitude towards Vladimir Putin. And with the U.S. support of Ukraine, whether it's ammunition, money, so forth, where are we with that, and what danger is Ukraine looking at as the U.S. position seems to shift toward the Kremlin?
So there's a lot of rhetoric, and it is alarming rhetoric, to be sure, and just exactly the way and the reasons you described. However, President Zelensky is coming to the White House tomorrow to sign a long-term deal over U.S. joint access to rare earth minerals and other minerals in Ukraine. Now, any country that signs that, in the case of the United States, is not signing that as imagining a Ukraine and its mineral structure overtaken by Russia, because it's not signing it with Russia, it's signing it with Ukraine. So from the Trump administration's perspective, and history will judge this, but what they're saying publicly and privately is, forget all the rhetoric about security guarantees. Signing this means our economic self-interest depends on a sovereign, protected, and secure Ukraine, because that's who we signed the deal with. And we want access jointly to rare earth minerals that are necessary for weapons productions and telecommunications. I won't go into all the boring details, but there are a lot of rare earth minerals in Ukraine that could help the United States in those areas, because they're currently hived off from us by actions taken in China. And it will take a long time to scan the landscape in Ukraine, find out exactly where they are. It will take a very long time, 12 to 18 years to mine them. And then mines typically operate for 50 or 60 years after you've made them. So 12 to 18 years to build a mine, get it operational, and then 50 or 60 year lifetime. So the Trump administration is like, forget all this stuff about the rhetoric. Who cares? This is the way Ukraine can align itself with us, whether it's in NATO or not, and have U.S. backing for U.S. interests that we will defend. Again, history will judge this, if that's exactly what it means and how it plays out. But it's at least plausible. And Trump said this yesterday in the cabinet meeting. I don't think anyone's going to attack us if our businesses are there and we're running big mines. No one's going to attack us because they know what that means. And they know what it means when I'm president. Okay. Well, when you're not president, what does it mean? I don't know. So I do think that deal And it's being signed slightly under duress because Zelensky knows the only way he can continue to keep a very firm relationship or even semi-firm relationship with the Trump administration is to sign a deal that grants U.S. access to these rare earth minerals. He is betting that that will do more to protect Ukraine's interests and assist Ukraine in negotiations about ending this war than anything else. Trump basically took NATO membership off the table. And what he might be saying is you don't need NATO membership if you've got our minds, if we're there running your minds, or at least collaborating with you on it, because that's better than NATO, because we're there and we're right in front of everyone who might attack you, specifically Russia. Again, history will judge this, but this is one of the unique ways Trump negotiates things. He doesn't go through multilateral organizations, or he's less inclined to. He's much more inclined to do things nation to nation, one to one, your relationship, our interests, your interests. He considers those things much more binding and enforceable. We'll see.
Is there still, it seems like it from the outside, that there is plenty of confusion as it pertains to the Doge organization and what they're doing, and people receiving emails that they need to answer defending their jobs and then being told, no, actually don't. So has that confusion subsided at all?
Oh, no. It's only ramping up. And yesterday, CBS News and several other news organizations confirmed, and the Veterans Administration confirmed this, that announced job cuts there are being rescinded. Why? Because Republicans pushed back in Congress and said, what are you doing? What are you cutting Veterans Affairs personnel who deal with either forms submitted or services rendered or scheduling appointments or whatever for veterans needing care or any other thing? What are you doing that for? And we've talked about this before, quick reminder, 21% of the federal workforce employed at the Veterans Administration all over the country, not just in D.C., all over the country. So I do think that there is a place where these job cuts are going to begin to reverberate. I had someone on the program, my program, America Decides, yesterday, which I anchor now 5 days a week on CBS News 24/7 from the University of Kansas, talking about the 1,000 IRS employees to be laid off in Kansas City. And that job cuts there could be as high as 3,000 in the federal workforce, of about 30,000 in Kansas City and surrounding areas. That will have an economic consequence for all that part of Missouri and eastern Kansas. They're not alone. Again, 80% of the federal workforce is distributed outside of the national capital region. So as these job cuts go, there will be assessments of, are they being done in accordance with need? Are they being done in a recognition of employment performance? And just because you're probationary, meaning you might have changed jobs or might have been newly to the federal workforce, doesn't mean you're not performing your job, doesn't mean your job isn't important. And as some of these job cuts get rescinded, agencies are finding that out. So this has a long way to go, and we are deep in the confusion zone.
Yeah, and Major, where do you go with balancing cutting the federal workforce, but knowing that some of these workers are in departments or on projects that were approved, created by Congress? Mm-hmm. And so does the executive office have the power to completely hamstring certain projects that were congressionally mandated?
So cabinet secretaries can reprogram funds with some, unless there is specific congressional language that you cannot. So cabinet secretaries, Senate-confirmed cabinet secretaries, have some latitude, and they can reorganize their departments. All of that is legitimate. And the President of the United States can, through executive order or executive memorandum, send directions to cabinet secretaries to do this. President Trump signed one earlier this week, asking for a significant reorganization plan and giving his cabinet secretaries about a month. That's all permissible. What is interesting about all this, and you mentioned Congress. So I'm old enough. I'm really old. Okay. I'm super, super old. I'm old enough to remember and have covered the Reinventing Government initiatives under the Clinton administration. I covered that entirely as a congressional reporter or an editor for the newspaper I was working at the time. That was a six-year process. It trimmed 429,000 federal employees. Very few of them were laid off because they wanted to work with Congress. Most of those job cuts over 6 years were achieved through attrition, or not filling vacancies once they became open. There were some layoffs, but not nearly as many. And they were to create greater efficiencies bit by bit within the agencies. That initiative, by the way, introduced e-filing of your taxes. A lot of the early internet innovations into the federal government were introduced then to create more efficiency and more cost savings. All of that flowed through Congress. That's why it took 6 years. But it wasn't a meaningless effort at all. It saved real money. Real money. And trimmed the size of the federal workforce. In fact, as those full-time employees in the federal workforce went away, they were replaced by what? Federal contractors. There are now about 5 million federal contractors. They're not full-time employees on the federal government payroll. They're contractors who receive contracts. That's also being re-examined now by the Trump administration. And some of those contractors, also distributed all over the country, are now nervous about their contracts and the wherewithal that they receive from those. That's another touch point and possibly a politically volatile one.
Major Garrett, we love it. Thank you. We will talk to you next week.
I will be here next Thursday, right with you.
Yes.
Excellent.
Let's go.
Right.
Hey, we should make Major come to Kegs and Eggs. You want to come to Kegs and Eggs on
opening
day?
Bush Stadium,
March
baby.
27th. You could be our guest.
Oh, I think he thinks it's a joke.
No, we're totally serious.
No. I take the invite seriously. I think I'll be a little busy here.
Okay. Yeah. They're going to be actual eggs.
We
Major.
Are having eggs for the first time,
no
Major.
No surcharge either.
Yeah. It's been a hot minute since we've had eggs at Kegs and Eggs.
Yes. Well, that will be a media event all its own.
Yes.
A large supply of eggs in one location.
We'll tell you all about it.
That's right. Thank you, Major.
Thanks, Major.